Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. This is the Weekend Review as Michael Gross and myself discuss as much as we can for this Weekend Review. Obviously, we don't get to every little nitty-gritty thing. It would be a four-hour conversation. But we push close to two on this one as we cover everything on Raw and SmackDown that we could. And I hope we covered your topic of choice. And we've got some maybe exciting little projects coming up that we'll talk about as we get closer to getting those things going. But in the meantime, he joins me for the great conversation leading up to the Royal Rumble, potentially after the Royal Rumble, surprise returns in the Rumble. What could they be? Our thoughts on WrestleMania over the next 3 years and their locations, what that could mean. And of course, Royal Rumble is just 2 weeks away. So with Royal Rumble just 2 weeks away, there is a lot of work that WWE still needs to do with their programs and with their title matches. And certainly, there's no shortage of news this week with Kevin Owens returning, taking Adam Pearce's place on SmackDown. On the Raw side, we've got The Fiend versus Randy Orton, assumingly at the Royal Rumble, though that hasn't been officially announced. I think it's solidly presumed. Unless they just both end up at the Rumble and have a confrontation at that point. Who knows? But I think that with Drew McIntyre also facing Goldberg, there may be some fan backlash coming at the Royal Rumble, and we discuss that and how WWE could navigate those very, very just tumultuous waters that they've gotten themselves into with a returning Goldberg, of which Michael and myself are not exactly fans of. I will put it very mildly that way. So, guys, if you haven't joined us before, thank you so much. This is the WWE Podcast, and we are here almost every single day, sometimes more than once a day, with covering Raw, SmackDown, NXT, highs and lows of the week with Mimi, which is posted usually Sunday mornings or late Saturday nights. And Michael Ritter does the SmackDown review. I covered for him this past week. He's feeling under the weather, but hopefully he'll be back this coming Saturday for your SmackDown review. And Zach Smith, who is doing our NXT reviews, drops every single Thursday. And myself, I host these Weekend Reviews. I do a Raw review, which is coming, of course, on Tuesday evening. And then Wednesday is your Wrestling Nostalgia and also your Mailbag. So I record two shows on Wednesday. Certainly no shortage of content here on the WWE Podcast. And we are 2 weeks away from the Royal Rumble, guys. 2 weeks. It feels like I just said three. Things are going quick. Things are going very, very quick. And it'll be Rumble, and then WrestleMania season is officially underway. So, and one last thing. If you guys would like to support us and you don't want ads in the show, you're tired of the ads, you go to patreon.com/WWE podcast and you go to just becoming a patron for $1 a month. You get the entire library of the WWE Podcast with zero ads in them. So imagine that, right? You don't get any interruptions. It's just all wrestling content all the time at Patreon. So check us out there. We'll also be, and I know I keep saying this, but I'll be doing small little video there. I may even go live on Instagram, which, by the way, you can follow us at WWE_podcast or wrestling_audio on Twitter if you'd like to find us on social media. And the reason I say talking about video is because it's a whole new dynamic to include video. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out a best way to do this from a time perspective for myself. I wouldn't do long form video. It would be kind of snippets or just very quick thoughts or rants that would go onto the Patreon site, which would be exclusive for patrons, of course, but also live streaming either on Patreon and or on Instagram. So let me know your guys' thoughts. What do you think about video? Would you want to see it, at least in like kind of small snippets on YouTube or on Patreon or on Instagram? Let me know your thoughts. RealWWEPodcast@gmail.com, of course, or you can just send me DMs on Twitter and or Instagram. So, okay, let's get to the conversation with Michael Gross. We go for an hour and a half, hour and 45, talking about all the things leading to the Royal Rumble and beyond. So hope you enjoy this, guys. And of course, I'll be back on Tuesday. Until then, I'll talk to you next time. Alrighty, it is time for your week in review. Tonight, I've got back, you guys know him, Michael Gross is back. The Gardener is here to talk WWE, Raw, SmackDown, and we're just 2 weeks away from the Royal Rumble, believe it or not. It feels like I was just saying it was 6 weeks, so man, time's going pretty quickly here. And then, bam, we're into WrestleMania season. So, Michael, welcome back to the show. How you doing, man?
I'm doing absolutely great. Thank you for having me back. And I just want to say hello to everybody. I've missed you all. And tonight we're just going to talk about what's going on in this week's wrestling, Raw and SmackDown. It was a pretty interesting week. It was a lot of flashbacks to what's been happening in the past weeks. But it looks like they're really trying to shape the card up. And I'm really ready to delve into it whenever you are, man.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a Royal Rumble that is unfortunately going to be without fans. I know people were speculating weeks ago, could WWE actually have fans there? And we obviously got the WrestleMania news for the next 3 years that WWE, and maybe I'll just get your quick opinion on that for whatever it's worth, commenting on WWE's locations. But this year, WrestleMania split into two nights again, with April 10th and 11th, I believe it was, of Saturday night and Sunday night, and then WrestleMania 38 is going to be in Dallas, and WrestleMania 39 is going to be in LA, as John Cena made that announcement on the WWE YouTube channel. So what are your thoughts on this announcement for the next 3 years?
Well, it's a lot of wishful thinking. Unfortunately, you and I do not have the magic answer as to when this pandemic is going to end and when we're going to go to at least 50% attendance, which makes any kind of live audience somewhat worth it. So, of course, Dallas, a big wrestling town with World Class, with the Von Erichs, the Freebirds, the history, the lineage, they're rabid fans. You also border Mexico. So, well, you don't border Mexico, but you are in Texas, so you're close to all the Lucha fans who might come across the border for the day. It's very, very much steeped in wrestling history, and so I really feel that if they open up to 50 to 75% for Dallas, it's going to be a big. It's going to be a capacity crowd for that number. As far as LA goes, usually the venues, just depending, you know, it could be a 20,000 person venue, and if they go 100% capacity at that point, it's going to be packed out. People are going to be really excited. I won't be surprised even 2 years from now if you see a ton of masks in the crowd. I really don't think our masks are going to go away for at least 5 years, which I'm happy with that because I don't want to get sick. But it just makes sense to go to these super populated towns. Dallas, huge. Dallas-Fort Worth, it's a super city. It's a dueling city. LA, of course, is the second biggest city in the United States. So they're definitely going for crowd appeal. They're going for places that people travel to that have international airports. They're trying to cover every base. So okay, so going forward, I think that they're definitely going for the biggest fan reaction possible. So, you know, good for them. Kudos. And unfortunately, neither one of those places are close to me. So I don't think I'm going to be attending anytime soon.
Yeah, they aren't exactly in my neck of the woods either. All in southern locations and all thousands of miles away from me. But yeah, Dallas, particularly Arlington, which I actually specifically think is where it's at. It's like a 20-minute ride to Arlington, from what I understand. It's close enough to Dallas to call it Dallas. And Dallas is a huge Southwest Airlines hub. And hopefully by that point next year, people are actually able to travel safely and all that. And the vaccine rolls out. Of course, as you mentioned, the pandemic is driving everything, which is why WWE kind of waved the white flag this year and just was like, guys, we're not going to wait until the last minute. It's a two-night event. I will be shocked if there's anyone in attendance. I mean, just because it's two nights, does that mean maybe they have a 10%, 20% capacity? I doubt it. I still think that they're just kind of going, well, this is over again this year. No fans, which is my thought. I would still love to see fans in the arena. We all would, but certainly the pandemic and how it's going to drive out and the infection rate, everything else is really the key point in how WWE is going to move forward. But I think that WrestleMania, them doing that this way and their faux news report that I kind of hated but loved in a weird way. I didn't hate it as much as I thought I was going to. But again, we're not here to analyze the WrestleMania report that they put together, but it's nice to see them 3 years out telling us, and then bam, WrestleMania 40 after that. It's just insane to think that far out. So, all right, well, let's get into this week, because now we're 2 weeks away from the Royal Rumble. We've got matches shaping up. We've got returns imminent. And
yes.
I'll start with, I mean, there's a lot of places I could start, but I guess Roman Reigns. I seem to just gravitate to how good he's doing and just how he's taken WWE and put it on his back and gone down the field with it. And Roman Reigns this week was bullying Adam Pearce, and he got Adam Pearce to sign the no DQ stipulation for their match for the Universal Championship at the Royal Rumble. And then he got him to sign a last man standing, only to have Adam Pearce, in his mic cutting out in and out, but you kind of knew what he was saying,
yeah.
That it's standard language in the contracts for WWE that if someone is unable to compete, a suitable replacement will be selected. Since he's the person who can't compete, he's going to select his own replacement, which was a returning Kevin Owens. So what did you think about this?
This goes two ways for me. First of all, I really have always been a big fan of a longer storyline. That way you have some lineage in the meaning of it. Once they started the In Your House thing many years ago and they started doing the monthly pay-per-view, I don't like the three-week build and then all of a sudden I'm on to the next person. Well, it just doesn't make sense to me how they've tried to push that mold for so long. So I like longer storylines. However, with this being said, I think it would have been better for it to be somebody else. I'm not exactly looking for a super shock factor, but it would have been better for Kevin Owens if it happened on the night as opposed to SmackDown beforehand. And I think that would have been a better swerve for it, especially another week's build-up, Adam Pearce being nervous, things like that. So it didn't look as in your face or so predictable. It's not that I need a surprise, but I just think it would have went a little bit further because this is going to be the third match. I really don't see them taking that title off of Reigns anytime soon. So with that being said, they always talk about being strong in defeat. Well, Owens looked good in defeat twice, even being thrown from dear Lord, God awful heights. But at this point, if he loses again, he is no longer strong in defeat. He kind of looks like the guy who just can't get it done. And so I think a third loss, even if it's a no contest, is going to go against Kevin Owens' stock. And I think it's going to really deplete who he is as a main eventer. And considering SmackDown, you look at who could be, you know, up at that main event tier as a face. You got Kevin Owens, you got Daniel Bryan, and Kevin Owens is a natural heel anyway. I like him as a face, but it's like Triple H. You're just waiting for the moment for him to turn his back. I just think that it's cool. It would have been better to happen that night. Adam Pearce to, you know, all of a sudden pull his hamstring and be like, but I found a suitable replacement. Could have worked out a little bit better in that aspect. How about you?
I guess I'm a little bit more excited about this than you. I'm not off the page about it. I think that the matches that they've had over the subsequent months have been higher than and better than I thought they would be. And I know that Kevin Owens can deliver a great match. I know Roman Reigns can deliver a great match. But their match at TLC for me was, and I know this is saying a lot, and you may agree and disagree, I think that may have been Kevin Owens' best match in WWE to date with Roman Reigns at TLC. It was just, I absolutely loved that match with those two, and they're going back to the well again. Now, as you mentioned, and to your point, do I think Kevin Owens is going to capture the Universal Championship? I would say probably not, but as you know, there's also, just like you mentioned, there is that third loss in a row that would, there does reach a point where you are no longer Teflon, and it's a loss will damage you, and this one I think will hurt Kevin Owens. Now, could he still win by hook or crook? I mean, Roman Reigns, that is, of course, that's how he won his last couple of matches, but I think that this one could really sting with Kevin Owens, which means, do they possibly put the belt on him? I still, as much as I love Kevin Owens and I love him on the mic, I love him as a character, I still don't think it's worth taking the belt off of Roman this close to WrestleMania with all the momentum that Roman Reigns has had. He hasn't had a misstep. He hasn't had a single misstep in my mind since he turned heel in late August. It's been, what, 5 months since Roman Reigns has turned heel, and it's been the best 5 months of his career, and he hasn't had one misstep? It's absolutely amazing. So that's really hard for me to swallow, to say myself that I don't want Kevin Owens capturing the Universal Championship from a heel Roman Reigns simply because of how great Roman Reigns has been. And we also got Apollo Crews coming into the mix, having a conversation with Roman Reigns. So maybe Apollo Crews gets involved and costs Kevin Owens at Royal Rumble. But what do you think about that dynamic with Apollo getting involved now?
I absolutely love it. Apollo's biggest thing is that the guy, I mean, he's his build is amazing. His athleticism is off the charts. He can do things that many wrestlers cannot do in that ring. And if you don't believe me, just look at his indie stuff. And it's, I don't want to say he's been wasted, but I think they called him up too fast. He didn't get time to develop more in NXT. There's lightning in a bottle, but remember, and you can't compare anybody to The Rock, but when they brought The Rock up as the blue chipper, smile a lot, Apollo out there smiling, you know, and the people turned on him because they didn't want to see this sickly sweet syrup dipped baby face cookie cutter thing. And I wouldn't say Apollo's the second coming of that, but it's get out there, smile, do a pose, have a decent match, do some amazing moves at the end, and then lose. A heel turn for Apollo is going to be a breath of fresh air. If he aligns himself with Reigns, great. If he doesn't align himself with Reigns and becomes his own man, I think that could be even better. I don't want to see him be a stooge or a lackey. I don't want to see this be a Seth Rollins, Buddy Murphy kind of thing. I want to see him be his own man. I think this could be really awesome. Go ahead, have him help Reigns, but I want to see it be vicious. I want to see a darker side of him, not just hold somebody's leg down or trip him or, you know, slide in and hit a finishing move and slide out. I want to see something a little bit more dastardly, so that way if we're going to set up a good program between Owens and Apollo, and Apollo works on his mic skills, and if it can match up to his athleticism and his in-ring, he and Owens could really lead a great program going to WrestleMania. So, yeah, I'm really all game for that. And as you were saying about Reigns having 5 great months, he's had 5 astronomical months. This is what he's been waiting for. I love it. The only thing I didn't like about tonight, one, I'm tired of contract signings. Once a year is fine. And I mean once. I don't care who it is, just one time. Because it's a played-out segment where wrestlers could be wrestling. Two, It's if it doesn't end with a table getting smashed and someone usually getting speared or driven through a piece of furniture, then the second part's always a swerve, just like we had tonight. So that was the takeaway. And at the beginning of the show, when Reigns kind of looked a little perturbed, looking like he was almost intimidated when Paul Heyman took the first contract to Adam Pearce. Like, he looked like he was nervous about it, and that didn't make sense to me. If he's as dastardly and so underhanded, and if he's as dominant that he is, and that what he's portraying, which is so amazing, then I expect more of him to be more confident. And I would have expected him to just go straight into, I want last man standing. I want it now, instead of playing cat and mouse with it and batting it back and forth.
You know, that's WWE creative for you. I mean, I'm not going to put Roman Reigns on that and put him on the chopping block. It's just creative, which seems to be kind of hit and miss, as you know, and I know very well. But to the point about Apollo Crews, this is something brewing, and I hope it's a heel turn more than a babyface continuation, because if I never see Apollo Crews smile again in my life, I will be fine with it. I mean, I've seen him smile for 6 years or however long it's been. It feels like since he was one of the first people to come up from NXT, and we're all excited about it. He's one of the first call-ups, blah, blah, blah. And he's been the exact same guy over those five, 6 years, whatever it's been. He has not done anything. He's just, we all think of Apollo Crews. He's athletic and he smiles a lot. That's all we know. And we know that there's more. We know that Apollo Crews has more underneath that. And perhaps this is what Roman Reigns is going to do, is bring that side of him out. And the poison that is Roman Reigns right now, which I mean as a compliment, is going to be injected into Apollo Crews, I hope, and just see a vicious, nasty side of Apollo Crews that we've never seen before. I think this could be a career-defining turn for Apollo. It certainly, can't turn any other way. I mean, and next week he has an Intercontinental Championship match against Big E, so let's not forget that. I would say that he could possibly capture it, except it's Big E, and the fans would lose their minds if after all of this time, Big E, who the fans have been waiting to just kind of burst out onto the scene in his own singles capacity, getting a singles championship, and really he just captured it a few weeks ago, a month ago. I really don't think that he'd be the best move to put the belt onto Apollo Crews. Do you think there's any possibility of that next week?
Apollo's definitely not going to win the championship next week. There were some really convoluted moments on SmackDown with the whole match, because Big E, his comments towards the commentary team was rather snide, and it's just funny because it looks like Apollo is slowly turning heel. It looks like Big E is using heel commentary, and that Sami Zayn, who is the actual heel of the whole thing, was the one who got screwed over. And so I'm looking at perhaps double turns all the way around, and if they do, that's going to be a headache. I really don't want that. But Big E is definitely acting more and more not confident, but more like I think the term I'm looking for is not a bully, but a smart aleck. Mm-hmm. And Apollo hits that overhead belly to belly, and he's like, I do that, but much better. And I'm like, why is he saying it like that? That's not babyface commentary. It's not confident commentary. He could say something more like, I've been known to throw that, and I don't know whose is better, but we could find out, things like that. I don't always want my babyfaces to be syrupy sweet, but for a guy who just won this title and everybody wanting him to have this momentum and him finally getting his moment, if we're going to build him up into a star, we can't have him riding that fine line of a tweener. So it's leaving me with a few question marks, and I wouldn't be surprised if the match gets revisited after a Sami Zayn run in and it becomes a triple threat for Royal Rumble. And that's where I kind of see it going. And I even see that having maybe a convoluted finish. And if they took the title off Big E, it would be one of those deals where one of the other two competitors pinned the third one. In this case, I could see it going back to Sammy because he's got his whole conspiracy theory, whole thing going on. I'm not really a big fan of, but at least it gives us something to sink our teeth into as far as him having a character. But no, I don't see that belt changing hands next week. I see it as a build towards Royal Rumble, because your Intercontinental Champion is not going to win the Royal Rumble. It's very few and far between that you're going to have a dual title situation. We haven't had one since Seth Rollins, and before that, Ultimate Warrior maybe?
Yeah.
So it's so few and far between that I see him getting tied up more inside of a match with Sami Zayn and Apollo Crews going forward into the Rumble. But next week, no, definitely not.
Yeah, I'm just a little nervous because of the fact that WWE is obsessed with creating championship matches on free TV every week. I mean, it's literally been almost every week, every show. It seems like they're doing a women's match, or they're doing a WWE championship match, Universal Championship match with Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens in a steel cage on Christmas Day that they never explained how that happened. I mean, things like that. It's just like, how do you get to here without telling us chapters 1 through 9 and we just look at chapter 10? I mean, but I'm trying to reserve my rants for a little bit later on with some certain things. But in closing, with Apollo Crews and Sami Zayn, look, and Big E, first of all, I actually am a big fan of what Sami Zayn is and stands for, and just his obsession with constant conspiracy theories, taking what a lot of people are like in real life, where everyone thinks they're conspiring against them, and Sami Zayn has blown that up, and now he's got a documentary crew following him around. I actually find it really comical. I don't mind what Sami Zayn's doing, and Big E is not coming across as likable, although I didn't really like Big E's New Day character to begin with. This seems kind of like an offshoot of that, where he still hasn't really disconnected from New Day. Maybe he should spend a little less time on Ghostbuster sweaters and a little bit more time on character development instead of sitting on a couch like he's in his living room at SmackDown. I mean, I don't know why how this is supposed to appeal other than, hell, it's wacky Big E. Like, can we get the hell away from this? I understand he's not wearing the New Day colors. He's not saying, New Day rocks, but it's still got the stench of of the New Day. I need it gone. I don't know why or how or what it's going to take for Big E to evolve and to just slowly evolve into something more serious. I cannot take him seriously. I think his career will be stifled if he can't have that evolution of just a different side of Big E other than wacky, goofy cartoon Big E.
No, I get it. I agree. I'm glad that you mentioned the Ghostbusters sweater because I almost said something, but I bit my tongue. And this is coming from the guy that has the collection of the custom print socks. So, but it's he really needs to phase away from that whole goofiness. I mean, like I said, I wear custom print socks. I got Scooby-Doo socks, Dr. Seuss, Memphis Grizzlies, you name it. Point being, you can't see him with my pants covering them up. So, he needs a character tune up. It doesn't have to be a 180. He just has to tune it up. That's what Kurt Angle did. You went from goofy to slower to angry to frustrated to psychopath to the man making Steve Austin tap out. He needs a character tune up. And my other thing is, he's got to pick a direction as far as, is he a face? Is he a heel? If it's confidence, come across as confidence. Don't come across as a heel in the making. I do like his single push. I really want to see it go somewhere. And also the other thing I took away from the match for everybody else is, for all you wrestling historians out there, isn't Sami Zayn starting to look a little bit like the original Rock and Roller Buck Zumha from the AWA? Yeah. Sorry, folks, if you know who that is, cool. And if you don't, look it up, and hopefully his career doesn't go the way of Zumhoff's. And if you don't know what I mean, you might want to look that up too. But, yeah, let's tune up the character. Thank God there's no pancakes anymore. I would rather see him come out dressed as a professional. I want to see him in a suit and not a bow tie, like a regular straight tie, delivering a straightforward promo, talking about what he likes and he doesn't like about his opponent. But when he gets in that ring, I want to see him not necessarily Goldberg eviscerate people. I want to see him do his regular, but then when he does his belly to belly, I want to see a little bit more power in it. I want it to show when he puts you down on the mat, he's going to drive you right through that mat. You know, you're not messing with this guy that, you know, had rainbow-colored unicorn tights. You're messing with a man who might just rip your head off and leave it on a stick.
Mm-hmm. I don't feel that with Big E. With a guy that is as strong as Big E is, I think, number one, yes, I would like to see that evolution of Big E. That doesn't mean he needs to be all serious all the time and turn into this dark character and become the guy that sits in a room and asks people to knock on the door. You know, I don't need that, okay? But what I do need is an evolution. I'm not seeing an evolution. It's just another variant of the New Day character, Big E. And that's the part I have the biggest problem with Big E, is just the goofiness, the whole like not taking things seriously, kind of a heel. I think they're presenting him as a babyface. I don't think that they have any intention of turning him heel. They feel that this is endearing or entertaining to the fans at home. I don't think this is endearing. And last point on Big E, I can we just change his finish? I am not a fan of the big ending. I know that it has been his staple for many years, but I find it very, very weak. I mean, when you do a suicide dive on the outside or you do a big splash and that doesn't finish it, but a guy just doing basically a pancake, which is what it is. I mean, he's just landing flat on his stomach. That ends the match. I mean, I can't buy it. It's been so many years that I still can't buy that the big ending, after all the crazy stuff that him and the New Day and the Usos throughout the years have done to each other, kicking each other in the jaws and doing flips and all these things. And the big ending, which is just a front bump on your stomach, is what ends the match. I still can't buy it. I don't know. Maybe do you have a problem with his finish, or am I just nitpicking?
No, you're not nitpicking at all, because with the size of that guy, I mean, he has arms like trees and he has legs the size of people.
Yeah.
Okay. The man can do whatever he wants to do to somebody. It's the same thing with Braun Strowman's running power slam. It kind of made sense for Davey Boy Smith, but this is 20 years later, and the size of Strowman, he should be doing a a release powerbomb or something like that. I mean, there's no shame in having people having the same finisher as long as you throw in somewhat of a variant. Someone could use a DDT, but Andrade uses a hammerlock DDT. Just by putting that arm in a curl position, it changes the move in nature somewhat. It makes it a signature. Now, if you look at the big ending with his arm the way it is, it's nothing more than a diamond cutter to your stomach.
That's it. It is a very weak looking finish that I have never ever bought ever. And I don't, like, maybe he could do, like you said, a power bomb or some kind of variant of the last ride the Undertaker used to do. He's certainly strong enough to do it to 95% of the guys on the roster, you know, outside of maybe like Braun Strowman or, you know, a guy that's like 300 pounds. He could pull off a last ride type of power bomb, or maybe just add a damn submission. I don't know. Either way, and I think we're probably, you know, preaching on deaf ears here to WWE Creative. It's not at the top of their list. We've got to finish. Why mess with it? Because it looks terrible. It's terrible. It's just so weak after, you know, nonetheless. Okay, moving on. Shinsuke Nakamura, sticking on this kind of SmackDown theme here. I gave my SmackDown review last night, but I haven't heard yours, obviously. With what they're doing with Shinsuke, they've clearly turned him back babyface. They gave him the Rising Sun entrance music back. He had a big breakout tournament or a gauntlet last week, beating three guys in a row cleanly. And what do you think this is for Shinsuke Nakamura? I mean, do you think that perhaps this is a springboard into something bigger, or is it just, we're done with Cesaro and Shinsuke as a tag team. Let's just break them up, and they'll be kind of mid-carter, mid-upper carters for a while. What do you think's happening here?
They're going rockers on it. Obviously, it's going to be built towards Nakamura versus Cesaro because of the whole nature of the Daniel Bryan situation, which I was still really surprised that Cesaro went over Daniel Bryan. But we'll get into that a little bit later. What I'm really seeing right now is that they're trying to build up Nakamura. The problem is he has to wash off the stench of being basically having to cleanly lose to Jinder Mahal, not being able to beat the worst idea of a world champion in probably the last 20 years. I forgot about The Miz, but seriously.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
No, I honestly, like, the Jinder Mahal experiment was one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Gotta give him credit for trying. Like, I don't blame him for trying. Like, you know, but the execution.
The execution was terrible, and to go over somebody as talented as Nakamura, okay, with the dirty win, I see you have to beat Nakamura, but with the clean win, even though there was some distraction with a clean, that hurt his character. That set him back years. And then to put him in tag team purgatory for forever. It doesn't matter if you're tagging with Cesaro. You could be tagging with, I don't know. I mean, you could be tagging with CM Punk, but after cleanly losing to Jinder, even if it was 2 years ago, your character really has to go a long way to make the people forget about that and wash that stench off you. And then to get out of that stigmatism of, you know, a foreigner has to tag with a foreigner. Please, for the love of God, creative. If you're foreign, that's not your gimmick. You could be foreign and you could be anything. It's, you know, I wonder if I was a wrestler in Japan, would I have to go to the ring eating cheeseburgers with a full size car instead of, like, you know, a small Japanese model? And, you know, like, how American would I have to act? Because here comes the American wrestler. They don't do that. So I want to see Nakamura go face. Of course, it's going to be between he and Cesaro. If they would just loosen up the governing on the wrestling and let them do a little bit more than WWE style, because the King of Strong Style, unfortunately, is the king of WWE style now. Let he and Cesaro have a good 15 minutes and let them do a little bit of what one did in the Indies, the other one did in Japan. We're going to have a great match if they do that. That's the build. And then we also have to look at what are they going to do for the months after that, because you can't stretch out that program. It'll hurt both of them. Just if you go from former partners, and like I said, I like long programs, but former partners to feuding with each other, if you always associate each other, I will see it like a Cesaro and Sheamus thing. It's like, we don't like each other. Now we're going to get back together. Like, no, don't do this. Mm-hmm. So I don't want them to keep being associated. They both are too talented to be put in a vacuum because they cancel each other out. Let's let them go on to their separate ways after they have their match.
And I think that, unfortunately, WWE, if they were listening to this They're thinking to themselves, is that a challenge? Guys, I bet we can get 5 months out of this. I mean, they've done it, right? Like, look at Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins, for God's sakes. Look at King Corbin and Roman Reigns, right? Like, how long did that go? They've done it. So I'm sure they were like, guys, challenge accepted, right? So, I mean, here's the thing. And we all know how good these matches are going to be. WWE knows how good these matches are going to be. It will be almost impossible to get a bad match out of these two, given the skill set, the collective aggregate years that they've both been in the business, obviously not just in WWE, but in independence and New Japan and all that. We understand the quality of match that we're going to get. That is completely sold and it's locked in. We know this and that's great. But it comes down to, are the fans just going to get flat out tired of seeing this story if the story reasons for it continuing are weak? And that is where things could break down and the fans are like, okay, like we're done. I mean, three is like that magic number. Three in a program is that magic number. You know, you can get three pay-per-views at the most, usually before fans are like, can we just end this? I mean, it's over with. And very rarely do they go beyond it where fans are like, we want more, we want more, we want more. WWE takes something when they think they have something that works, and they just drill it into the ground until the fans are like, we did love this, you know, 4 months ago, and now you've completely just squeezed every drop of juice out of it, and now we don't want to see it anymore. WWE has had a habit of that forever. When they grab something, they just go, oh, we're going to do this forever. We're going to do this for months and months and months, and I'm scared about this. This could last a long time to the point of where we're like, we don't want to see this match anymore. I'm scared, because they know that this is just a shoe-in. Every time they're together, they're going to have a really good match to great match. So I'm scared. I think you may have put that out into the universe there.
Well, you know, overexposure is the key to mediocrity. And that's, unfortunately, with Bruce Pritchard going out and making that public statement that he believes that fans do not want change. I mean, there was another company that believed in that, and I believe Vince bought it for pennies on the dollar. So, you know, we really need, I don't need, like I said, the 3 week build to a new opponent all the time. A couple months for a feud is fine to me. If you can go old school for 4 months, but if you do, I only want two matches between them and at least 2 months apart. Or if you are really building it like in the old days when you had the big four, I want a great build. I want everything in there. So you really want to see the two go at it. But overexposure, if I have the same thing week in, week out, or just month in, month out, it's really going to kill it. And these two are way too talented to be, you know, 6 months from now trying to fight for the 24/7 title because they were just overexposed.
Oh, God, please. No. I don't know where – I don't even know if WWE knows where beyond this – program that's coming. And look, I'm looking forward to it because it hasn't happened yet, and these two are going to put on really good matches, and that's great. But I'm concerned about what's after that for them, and I don't think WWE Creative could even answer that question right now, given the past history of what they've done with booking and on the fly. And you hear about things changing that day. Very, very unlikely that you hear about anything coming out beyond that. I mean, potentially maybe an opponent for Roman Reigns that ends up just losing to Roman Reigns down the line. But again, that depends on if Roman Reigns is still champion after WrestleMania. So, but as we get to Daniel Bryan, I do want to touch on that, because Daniel Bryan is in this kind of quasi weird group as the like alpha. He's in like an alpha academy with Chad Gable and God Almighty Otis. And it just feels weird to me that Daniel Bryan, who's taken some big losses the last 2 weeks, by the way, he's lost clean to Cesaro, clean to Shinsuke Nakamura. And if, you know, prior to that, you had told me where they are in the pecking order, Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro would have been way down here. And again, where they've been portrayed, of course, not in my mind where they should be. And Daniel Bryan would have been kind of like, you know, my top five in terms of, you know, who should win a match and who should probably lose that match. So it was very shocking to see Daniel Bryan lose twice clean. And then he's part of this Alpha Academy with Otis, who's taking lessons, and he's taking advice from Chad Gable and Otis. Like, how is this even – shouldn't it be kind of the other way around? I mean, Daniel Bryan is one of the most respected, one of the most seasoned and traveled superstars in WWE, and yet they're treating him like Chad Gable and Otis are some kind of value-adding machines to Daniel Bryan. I'm not understanding. What the heck's going on?
Well, his stock has definitely fallen. It all started with the haircut. It sounds stupid, but man, yes. That haircut's gotta go. Like, you've got five other guys with that same haircut. It works for some people. It doesn't work for him. He looked better with his classic look, whether it be the beard and the Jesus hair or the American Dragon look, anything but that Miz hair. I know that the rumors on the dirt sheets going around is that Daniel Bryan, just like AJ Styles, is probably in the last contract of his career. They've made their millions. They can retire. He's got a beautiful wife. She's got a reality show. They're not hurting for cash. AJ's made his millions. He's good to go. And especially off reciprocal rights from the network and everything else, they're going to – excuse me. Got a little burp there. They are going to be making tens of thousands of dollars, you know, every quarter off just merchandise just any kind of rights from their likeness. So with that being said, if he's trying to elevate them, all he's doing is hurting the downside of his career. Gable, okay, we got a guy that proudly announced himself as Shorty G and became the butt of the writer's jokes and Vince McMahon's jokes because he's incredibly gifted, but he's short. Otis, I don't even want to touch that. There was a point where his career could have been salvaged if they kept him in his tag team and turned that tag team into a couple of blue collar, you know, tough guys, some rough and ready kind of guys. Instead, they made him worse and worse and worse, and they made him look like a special needs. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, without trying to break our censorship pact. So with clean words on my mind, I'm just going to say Daniel Bryan has really fallen far from grace, and having people who cannot win matches and look really stupid when they do, or look really stupid when they deliver promos, and have been utilized in cinematic garbage. It makes no sense. I liked it when he was working with like Drew Gulak and he was like the mentor. I liked it when, you know, he was giving back. Then he was showing this man is one of the best technical wrestlers you have, and you've basically pulled down your pants, defecated on a plate, handed it to him, and told him it was prime rib. I'm not having that.
Well, that's a hell of a visual. I think certainly Daniel Bryan should be at the point of his career where he is the teacher, not the student. I mean, I'm not buying the fact that this guy is learning anything from this faux alpha academy. I was fine with it once if it was just Chad Gable and Otis doing their silly thing, and I'm glad Otis finally just got a singlet, you know, and not constantly wearing shirts that are eight sizes too small. So there's that. Okay. There's at least that. They've made him a much, much, much smaller role on SmackDown. I think they heard the fans loud and clear. Thank God. But then they brought Daniel Bryan in as if he's the one who's the student. Why? It's so backwards. And then he gets booked to lose clean twice to Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro. Again, nothing against those guys, but in terms of where everyone's been the last few years, it was very shocking losses for Daniel Bryan in my eyes. So I'm a little concerned, but then I hear rumors of, it's going to be Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, and I'm thinking to myself, well, they're doing a hell of a job of turning you the other way to make you think it's not going to happen. I really don't think that that's the case. I don't see Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. Personally, I don't. Just because of what they've done, the damage the last couple weeks. Now, could they repair it? Sure, they could repair it over the next month or two, but I don't know. First of all, Yelly, you're right. Get rid of the damn haircut. Grow it out. Shave your head. Do anything but what you're doing now. Like, anything. I don't care what it is. Grow a mustache. Seriously, anything. That haircut does remind me of The Miz, of which we'll get to that, too. And I'm scared of my censorship on that. But Daniel Bryan right now is a teacher. He's not a student. Why are we dealing with this? But, okay. I mean, I think we've said our piece on that.
Absolutely.
I do want to ask you about one thing, and this is certainly not a big talking point of the week, but and you may disagree with me on that, and I'm thinking you actually may because of you're very old school. You're even more old school than I am, which is nothing wrong with that. But Billy Kay, over the last several weeks, has been at first, I was kind of embarrassed. I was kind of like, oh, God, terrible comedy. Here we go. They broke up the Iconics for what? And then, you know, Peyton Royce is just getting back into another tag team. Billy Kay's pretending to carry around a resume, and she's just trying to fit in. Although, over the last several weeks, she's actually been kind of growing on me to the point of where I somehow in my brain have connected two of my brain cells to want to see Billy Kay every week. And I don't know how that happened. And I mean that in a way that's, she is so all in on her character. Even it's preposterous that she has this resume with all these things on it that are clearly just garbage. And I also think that she has a knack for comedy in a very niche way, and in kind of a way that you don't expect her to have. And it's very, very difficult to do comedy. It's even more difficult to do comedy in wrestling when it's produced and forced for people that are not meant to do comedy. So I think Billy Kay, to me, has kind of a just this lovable loser feel to her, where she's trying to fit in. She was with the Riot Squad this past week, saying that she listens to Blink 182. I mean, just these ridiculous, ridiculous things. But I don't find it in a way that's eye-rolling in their normal, traditional, produced matches way that we crapped on all summer long with all the pay-per-views they did. But in a way that's just, it's almost endearing for this lovable loser that just is to me babyface now. She's on commentary this week. She's unofficially official on the Riot Squad. I don't know. Maybe I'm just going crazy. What do you think about Billy Kay?
Okay, so my notes on her for this past SmackDown is that first of all, her commentary was god awful. And I don't know. One thing I've never been sure of, they always talk about like Vince or somebody else is in the ear of your commentary crew, which I just could never do that. If I couldn't call it on the fly, I just don't understand how someone's supposed to be telling me something, how I'm supposed to say it at the same time. My brain just doesn't work that synopsis that easily. With that being said, I don't think that when the wrestlers have the headsets on, that they are necessarily being fed by somebody backstage. And you could tell that, I think, in this case, because it seemed like she was drifting off or really did not know what to say. Like she was at a loss for words, really trying to stretch out whatever she was saying. It is kind of funny with the whole, you know, resume. I taught her this, I taught her that. As far as her in-ring goes, she's got a long way to go. And of course, being the associate of the Riot Squad, I mean, I could see the interference coming. I could see what was going to happen. Of course, we had one of three dreaded roll-ups this week. But it's I have to put my finger on the pulse of this a little bit longer because this could go one of two ways. It could get ridiculous and basically, you know, Liv Morgan or Ruby Riott beats the shnikes out of her and leaves her in a ditch somewhere. Or she could be faking the whole time, this whole thing, and she's actually trying to get them to lose and eventually goes into a feud with them, which I would actually be for the latter, just because if she works on her in-ring, she has some kind of charisma to her. It's just where it's going to go. Now, if they go with the goof that can't get anything done constantly, that's water thin and we all see it coming. Now, if it is basically she just doesn't like them and she's trying to cause them losses by being, you know, their friend, I like that and I like where it could go. I like Ruby Riott. I've been a really big fan of Ruby Riott, and I think if you put Ruby Riott in a storyline, which is something that she sorely has missed, especially when she came back a couple of years ago. I think one of the first shows you and I talked about how healthy she looked when she came back. We both thought that they had big plans for her, and then they pushed her not to the mid card but way to the bottom. If you give her anything and let her put her foothold in it, let's see where she can go. And if Billy Kay is going to be the person that's going to be the conduit for this building block, I'm for it. I'm willing to give it a shot. Let's just work on Billy's talking. Let's definitely work on her ring work. When she slid into the ring, she looked really uncoordinated trying to get to the other side and get out. So that kind of stuff needs to be addressed. The ring presence is bad. And her ring work definitely – she still has some of that posing for the crowd that's not there or looking for the approval of the people that she's really just getting canned laughter for, or canned boos and laughs for, or cheers. So we got to work on that. So ring presence, and ring psychology, and let's see where it goes.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe she should do more mosh pishing, as she said.
Oh,
yeah.
God, don't get me started on that.
I mean, so, which is clearly a mess up by her, and then she just owned it, which if you screw up that bad, you might as well just own it, because Corey Graves is going to bury you. I mean, so, yeah, it is what it is. I mean, I agree that I don't know what the payoff is. I hope that it's not just this is her defined role, because unfortunately, when Vince McMahon finds anybody that has any inkling of comedic talent, he takes it. Wow. He latches onto it, and he just completely drives it into the ground. Look what they did with Otis. They completely destroyed his character. Vince destroyed his character when he was doing, I think, just great as the Heavy Machinery, which never got off the ground. They never became tag team champions for whatever reason. We had a heel turn by Tucker, which went nowhere. I mean, like, it was just bizarre of what happened with Heavy Machinery. But Billy Kay, I don't know what the payoff is. I'm actually, you know, when I tried to hate it, because every being in my, you know, every soul in my body was just like, listen, this is not what you like. You should not be liking this. Why are you liking this? You want to just change the channel? And I don't know. I don't know what it is. I could have just been, I could have had a moment, a senior moment. I don't know. But okay. I want to move on though to somebody who's not good at commentary. And that is, to me, Dominic Mysterio. I don't think Dominic Mysterio, I mean, I said this on my show last night. I said, have you ever seen the movie I, Robot? And I said, he feels like he is a robot in a human, like, skin. He is on the microphone the most just, you talk about uninspiring. I mean, I don't know if he's just gun shy. I don't know if he just has, you know, just focused all of his talent and all of his time on in-ring ability and just forgot about promo class and skipped promo class every week. I don't know. I don't know what it is, and he's extremely reserved. I want to shake him and be like, yo, like, is there someone in there? Hello? I just see nothing. I see a guy that is good in the ring. I think he's okay. He's Rey Mysterio's son. We've got that. Okay, great. The whole King Corbin deal is certainly better than Seth Rollins. Like, I'll say that. We can get the hell away from Seth Rollins now. Hallelujah. And I guess no pun intended. That is gone and finally behind us. But then Rey Mysterio goes backstage and tells his son, you know, listen, son, you know, you've never dealt with anybody like this dangerous, like Baron Corbin. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, you mean like the guy that you guys fought for 7 months? The guy that gouged your eye out and attacked your family? Like, yeah, nobody's as dangerous as Baron Corbin. I'm like, what are you talking about, Ray? Like, I don't know. So, quick comments on Rey Mysterio and Dominic and King Corbin. Anything?
Real easy, real quick. So Dominic is the right place at the right time. He's the son of Rey Mysterio. If he was not the son of Rey Mysterio and he has the talent he has, he'd still be stuck in NXT for at least another 3 or 4 years. I want everybody to realize that Adam Cole, who's one of the best wrestlers out there, is stuck in NXT forever, and Dominic is on the main roster. I just want you to digest that. Ooh. But Adam Cole is not the son of Shawn Michaels, or he's not the son of Bret Hart. He's not the son of somebody else who is a legend. So with that being said, Finn Balor is on NXT and Dominic is on the main roster. The guy cannot talk. He doesn't have his dad's charisma. What made Rey Mysterio is that he's 5'3". Dominic is 6'1", something like that. Okay. So he's never going to be his dad. He's never going to win a world championship. He'll be lucky to hold the IC or US for a couple of months. He's going to have that second generation stigma. There's for every Dominic out there, there's one Randy Orton, and there's a lot more Dominics and Ted DiBiase Jr.'s and so on and so forth in WWE's eyes. He doesn't have that niche that his dad did. With that being said, Corbin versus Rey Mysterio was a typical what you got, what you paid for. Corbin hit his spots. Rey Mysterio hit his spot. I don't understand why all of a sudden they had this argument backstage. Okay, Dominic, ever since, you know, the Seth Rollins thing, he's been the one with the attitude. He wants something. It also, once again, looks like he might be turning on his dad. Dear Lord, this stuff is water thin. Please don't do that, because the kid needs – Ray really needs to nurture him some more. He needs to work on promos. I don't know where it's going, and especially when they said, I know the person to talk to. I am afraid. Who I can't think of anybody who had that great Baron Corbin feud that, you know, unless he's going to go get the advice of Roman Reigns too. My Lord, where are we going with this? So that's where I'm stuck with it. Yeah. And so, you know, at the end of the day, what I'm seeing is that if it's not going to be Dominic eventually turning on Rey, I think that whoever the go-to for this advice is going to be a big disappointment unless they're going to dust off Cain Velasquez again, because they had to mention – yes.
Don't say it. No.
I'm sorry. Well, I mean, he did look like Squidward on his way to the ring, but but you look at it because they're supposed to be real friends, da-da-da-da-da, and I'm going to keep this abridged as much as possible because I'm talking too much already, but the point is there's nobody else, and they had to bring up the fact that he's a former Golden Gloves boxer. So if you're going to go against a former Golden Gloves boxer, you might as well bring in a UFC guy.
And for a Golden Gloves boxer, I will say that he very rarely uses those abilities that they constantly shove down our throats and remind us about.
I know.
In his style in ring, or in his arsenal, so to speak. So yeah, for whatever the heck that's worth. But I agree. Now onto the Raw side here, because we haven't really touched on Raw. Really, the big ticket items here on Raw were the fact that Triple H really took the place of Drew McIntyre, who tested positive for COVID, and it looks like the timing is going to work just perfectly for him to quarantine those 14 days like you're supposed to, right, and then make it to the Royal Rumble. The timing is really, really good. If he's going to get COVID, there's really no better time to do it, and it times out just right for Drew McIntyre to appear at the Rumble and face Goldberg. I can't believe I'm saying that, and it still hurts my soul. So there's that. And then, of course, we get Triple H facing Randy Orton in the main event that we all knew wasn't going to go that long. And we got really – it was just a means to an end to bring back – well, we thought the Fiend, Alexa Bliss, firing that fireball into his face. So I'll let you take those two things.
It's really simple for me right now. We've got Goldberg. We got Triple H. Welcome to Jurassic Park. So that's where I'm going with this one. I mean – there's other people you could have put in. Somebody who wants to stand up for Rome, excuse me, not Roman Reigns, but Drew McIntyre, because they look so much alike. You wonder if Vince has an archetype. Anyway, okay, Triple H versus Orton does nothing for me, and I have a feeling that's going to be revisited somewhat in a minor capacity. They're really wanting to push Orton to the moon on this whole thing. Of course, McIntyre and Goldberg is going to be the real story here. So I think this is their way of sidebarring Orton out of the situation. But I don't think Triple H is the person to do it. Triple H is in great shape, but he's a shell of the man he was 5 years ago, body-wise. He doesn't look like he should be competing, although he looks like if you ran into him in a dark alley, he'd probably mess you up pretty bad. It's just the fact that this does nothing for me. I'm glad that somebody stepped in, but it could have been so many other wrestlers who are off TV right now. It could have been a lot of people. There's a lot of different ways it could have gone. You know, somebody saying, hey, you want him? He's a little sick. How about me? But instead it had to be Triple H and this whole disrespecting the legends. And it's just – I get it's a very forced storyline. And, of course, it's a good way to blow it off. But we really got to remove Orton from this whole thing, because the worst thing I'm thinking is that – if they want to push Orton and McIntyre more, which that ship sailed. It sailed. I hope it's a flat earth and it sails right off the edge of the planet, because we need to go different places with these guys now. I think it's Orton and Edge is going to come back. So okay, let me slow down. If Orton gets involved and helps Goldberg win the title, I'm going to be really upset, because this is another one of those Bruce Pritchard things. People want the same thing they've seen for years. No, I really don't. I loved Goldberg in 1998-99. The man has proven that he does not care about doing anything in that ring the way he used to, let alone he was never that great. But that intensity, that squash match, okay, cool. You can't go more than 5 minutes without being exposed, and especially when you're having matches with legends and you're just falling apart, concussing yourself and just falling down in the ring, just slop. I don't want to see this. I don't want to see where it goes. So Triple H and Orton, let's make this the end of it. Alexa Bliss, keep doing what you're doing. And The Fiend, I hope you're back soon. But Goldberg needs to disappear after this match for a long, long time and just work on PR work for WWE. That's the best thing for him, and McIntyre needs a bigger picture and a bigger foil. And I'd like to see – I think McIntyre's foe should be the person that comes out of Elimination Chamber. That way they've got five people to build it up, and we've got at least 2 months to find a credible opponent, because if we do Orton again, once again we're getting that overexposed same match over and over again, and we're not going to do Goldberg again over my dead body. So that's where I am with this whole situation.
Well, boy, there's a lot here. I think your fears about Goldberg continuing his matches in WWE are probably going to be founded, because with Goldberg back at the Rumble, it's WrestleMania season. Why would they bring Goldberg back just to have a match at the Rumble and not have a match at WrestleMania? So that would tell me, and I've been steadfast about this the last couple of weeks, and it scares me, and I do not want to say this, and every fiber in my being is crying when I say this, but I think Goldberg is probably going to win the WWE Championship at the Rumble. And the reason I say that is they have driven home this past week. They kept telling you, Goldberg was, that's the one championship that eluded him. I mean, let's be honest, there's others, but he's never been WWE champion. They kept telling you that. They've put out a Goldberg special on the network. They've tried to build him. This past week on Raw, they had like a Heroes Welcome video package about Goldberg, his greatest hits, which is just a spear, jackhammer, snorting, smoke. I mean, like, that is all Goldberg does. That's it. Yes. That is it. I'm actually more concerned about the health of Drew McIntyre in this match, given the history of Goldberg. Now, we know what happened with Undertaker. He's not exactly a spring chicken either, so that contributed to the disaster that was Goldberg versus Undertaker. But I mean, we all know this match is not going to be long. We all know the three moves we're going to see. It might be a single clothesline, maybe a clothesline, but it's going to be spear, jackhammer, kick out, spear, kick out, spear. I mean, like, that's what it's going to be. It's just a bunch of finishers in this match. There's going to be no story told, and I don't want to hear that, well, maybe Goldberg's been training. No. That's not what Goldberg's been doing. Look, the guy's in great shape for 50-some years old, and I'm not taking that away from him. I've said this many times. Goldberg is a family man. Everything I've heard, he's a great human being, and that's wonderful. But in 2021, Goldberg has no business being in WWE. I have no idea who is driving Goldberg back here or in the ear of Vince McMahon to say, oh, man, the fans want Goldberg. I want to talk to these fans, these imaginary fans that live out there that want to see Goldberg back in WWE. I don't know who or why anybody would want him back. And furthermore, he spits in the face of the style that we have kind of grown accustomed to in the modern era of wrestling, meaning that people want to see longer matches. They want to see great maneuvers. They put a lot of emphasis on the actual story told in the ring. I'm more of I like to see a better story told and character development than in ring. Nonetheless, people, to me, in today's era, the modern fans are going to get the complete opposite of what they are used to and what they like, which is the, you know, guys flipping and flying and 450 splashes and all that stuff. Again, not my cup of tea, but the Goldberg style isn't my cup of tea either. I mean, that's the other extreme. You're talking about two extremes of wrestling matches where one guy just goes in and does finishers, and you have other guys that are just super athletic with little character and just move after move after move 100 miles an hour. So I'm more of in the middle, but Goldberg, this is going to be a very straightforward, you know what you're going to get, 3 minutes or less, and somebody's going down with you know, the fifth finisher, however many times it takes to kick out. I'm not looking forward to this at all. I watch it because it's Goldberg, fine. I mean, I know how big of a star he is or was in WCW, but I'm not in any way like super excited about this. This does nothing for me. I don't think it does anything for most fans. And most fans, by the way, are younger than they would have, or are at the age where they wouldn't even have known or watched Goldberg at the time that he was actually a star, which is why they're trying to put specials out. Oh, this is what he did. This is what he used to be. I don't know. And lastly, on this whole thing. Goldberg coming in, his logic for coming in and challenging Drew McIntyre was respect. And that suddenly he has the ability, the clairvoyance, to be able to read Drew McIntyre's mind as he thinks that Drew McIntyre thinks that he could beat the legends that were in their prime when he's in his prime, and that's disrespectful. Yet Goldberg is the one who split the Red Sea, so to speak, on Legends Raw, comes out, and then as Drew McIntyre was going to pay homage to the legends as they were standing there clapping for him, he gets in the face of Drew McIntyre being disrespectful himself. So I'm really just sad that there aren't fans here to completely just boo Goldberg out of the building here. I don't know how you're building Goldberg as a babyface. It seems that they are. I just wish fans were there so that WWE could really, really hear what the fans think of Goldberg at this stage of his career.
Well, it's almost like oxymoronic booking, okay? Because you have a guy who is a career babyface becoming a heel or going after a man who believes that he's disrespecting the legends, while you had a man who claims to be the legend killer all night blatantly disrespecting the legends, yet there's no repercussions for him from Goldberg. That's what we call WWE creative, not paying attention to the product they're putting in front of you. You know, why should I plug a hole in a boat that's the size of a quarter when I've got the one the size of a bowling ball in the other corner? It doesn't make sense. You know, I don't get where they're going with this. You have one guy in Randy Orton doing everything that Goldberg is claiming Drew McIntyre did, but yet he's going after the wrong guy. Who wrote this? You know, and you were talking about who are these fans that want to see Goldberg back in the ring? Well, it's all these fans. There's millions of them named Bruce Pritchard, and he's got about 50 friends. They all have Chromebooks that they're working on, and they can't sneeze in front of the boss, and they really want to write soap operas, but hey, they'll get their start in pro wrestling. They've never watched it before, but hey, you know, I mean, Jinder Mahal looks muscular, so why don't we put a belt on him? We'll just create a reason.
This is hard to watch. Now, if they turn Goldberg outright heel, I might be slightly more interested. Not that I would go out of my way to, you know, purchase a pay-per-view, if that were such a thing, to go see Goldberg. But at least it would be more in line with how the fans deal with and think of him now. They think of him now as just this legacy star that was a WCW guy, mind you. And most of the WWE fans knew of him. But most of the WWE fans were WWE fans, the older generation, I believe, were more of the ones that watched Raw. I mean, that's how I think of it. Of course, he had crossover audience and all that, but he was a WCW guy. He was not a WWE guy. He comes in, takes the spot of a younger guy that could be getting that opportunity. Goldberg's not going anywhere, he's not sticking around. He's a 50-some-year-old guy that comes in, does a couple of spears, captures the championship, drops the championship, and leaves. There is zero value to Goldberg. To me, Goldberg needs WWE. WWE does not need Goldberg. It is not that way anymore. This is a completely unbalanced equation that they've got backwards. And I don't know who is in Vince's ear thinking that they need to bring Goldberg back every WrestleMania season. To me, there's no value in this. He's not a needle mover. I don't believe at this stage of his career anymore, particularly because he came back in, 2016, 2017? That was kind of exciting because, like, oh, cool, Goldberg's back, you know, after his 2004 disaster of a year in WWE. He's back. Okay, yeah. Let's see what he can do. There's some interest. But we all know what we're getting now. There's not going to be any surprises. I think the interest and the shininess of this new toy that's back is gone. I don't see the value in having him back. The rub that some people are going to perceive that Drew McIntyre is going to give Goldberg, I think it's the other way around. I think Goldberg is going to get the rub from Drew McIntyre because this is to me just a complete waste of time. And if Goldberg captures the championship at the Royal Rumble and it's a clean victory, I want to see Twitter literally explode that night. I think, given everything, all the political stuff going on, it's already on the fringes right now. So I think it's going to completely erupt if Goldberg beats Drew McIntyre clean and Goldberg is there holding the championship up, pointing at the WrestleMania sign. There's a visual for you.
Oh, my Lord. Please just don't do this stuff to me because I it's like you said, if Goldberg wins, I don't see what a plan could be for WrestleMania unless it's – and this is the one – this is the tongue scraper right here. One more match with he and Triple H for Triple H to wear it one more time and take it out. Please do not do this because we are really – this reminds me of the death knell of the WCW days when they had brought in all these young people, and then, of course, they put idiots like Vince Russo in charge who were burying the product and ripping off stuff he had done before, but he didn't have the guidance of someone to say no on his dumb angles. And then you only had all these people who had been around like 25-plus years that – the fans were tired of seeing, and that's where they're going. And the ratings are diving. The ratings in WCW's death are almost 2.5 times higher than current Raw and SmackDown ratings. That's some food for thought right there. And while Goldberg was fun then, he's not fun now. While Triple H was fun then in Raw, he's let him do his stuff behind the scenes now because Cornette always says it. I can't miss you if you don't go away. But at some point, you got to stay away. Your time has come and gone. Let's pass on the knowledge. Let's work behind the scenes. Lord knows. I mean, I'm 45 years old. Now, if I wanted to wrestle, I would love to. But my body never developed that way. And I would love to work behind the scenes because there's always fresh people coming in. And you can – if something didn't work out with somebody, you could maybe make it work with somebody else. And having that ability to create is beautiful, and Triple H has that. But you can't just play with the same old toy. A kid gets – it's bored of the same old toy, and that's what Goldberg is. And that's what – you know, all these people that they're just – okay, it's great to see Edge because he can still go, but we're always afraid every time he takes a bump, everybody bites a knuckle and gasps. While being said, he can still pull out a really good match, and he'll do some new things. It's not the same old match. It's not like watching Rey Mysterio do the same 7 moves and then just fly around and bounce off things. That's, you know, it's the same thing with Jeff Hardy matches, same thing with Rob Van Dam matches, and we've all seen it for so many years. And if you keep feeding us that, it's boring us, and I just don't see, if you put this title on Goldberg, where we're going to go. And if I see him pointing at that sign for WrestleMania, I'll be the one to blow up Twitter. I've got the dynamite. That's a joke, everybody. But it's to that point right now where that's booking yourself in a corner. It really is. That's what I see. They're booking themselves in a corner.
They are, but I think that Vince thinks that he knows better, and that we've got a great opponent lined up for Goldberg at WrestleMania. I'm concerned because the timing is very suspicious that Goldberg comes back WrestleMania season. He's got instantly a WWE Championship match, which we didn't even address. That the fact that you're just given an opportunity because you're a legacy star that didn't have a great run in WWE, number one in WWE, and you aren't exactly regarded as one of the best of all time. You're just not. I mean, just, you know, that's also disrespectful to come in and challenge and think that you are owed that, because that's what the whole backwards logic is thing for me when he's talking about respect to Drew McIntyre. I'm here for respect. I'm here because of respect, that, you know, basically saying that Drew doesn't respect the legends. Well, yet he's disrespecting Drew McIntyre and the WWE Championship by thinking he should be immediately awarded an opportunity because he comes down and he just gets in the face of Drew. So this whole thing, I'm very fearful. I would say that I would say 75%, 25% that Goldberg wins at the Royal Rumble. That's how I feel right now. And then the next 2 weeks of television could change my mind. Drew is obviously not going to be there in a in-person capacity because of COVID. I don't think we'll see him in person until the Rumble itself, which is the smart thing to do. And so we'll have to deal with the backstage or the at-home promos that Drew was going to give. So, okay. Moving on. I do want to ask you about another thing that may incite us, but maybe it won't incite you. Charlotte Flair, Lacey Evans, Ric Flair, that whole conundrum. What happened, obviously, was Ric Flair turned heel on his daughter at 72 years old, 74 years old, however old he is. I'm serious. I mean, you know how old he is. He is involved in a storyline, but not just involved in a storyline. He actually turned heel on his daughter. I am very perplexed by this because what is the payoff of him and Lacey Evans? Okay, he's a sugar daddy to Lacey Evans. They make out. They go to the hotel room, and who knows after that? I mean, am I supposed to care about Ric Flair's sex life at this point in my life, at this point in his life? And how does this help Charlotte? I would agree. I would argue, I should say, that this does not help Charlotte, that it actually takes away from the focus of Charlotte. She has finally... over the years, gotten rid of the stigma that, oh, she's just Ric Flair's daughter. She, to me, has really carved her own path. I'm not of the belief that she's only there because of Ric. I think that Ric certainly opened the door, but she was the one that kicked the damn ball down the field and carried it and scored a touchdown for a football reference for you NFC, AFC championship folks out there who are watching football. But I think that Ric Flair right now is not needed in any capacity. I don't see the payoff. What are you going to have, a Charlotte versus Ric match? I don't understand what's going on. This is bizarro world to me. There's no need for Ric Flair to be involved in anything Charlotte does right now. What do you think?
Oh, I absolutely agree. Here's my takeaways from it is the fact that I don't want to misquote myself, or excuse me, don't quote me on this, but I believe that they did a similar storyline to this a couple of years ago where Ric was coming out and it was costing her matches and there was an incident between them. I think I want to say it was like 2018, maybe 2017. But like I said, I wouldn't quote me on it, but I could swear there was a similar storyline to this, which once again, people don't like change, right, Bruce? At 71 years old, first of all, in high def, it's sad to see him because he has like red spots on his face. Like when people start to get older and the skin breaks down a little bit, he doesn't look like the man he used to be. And so I'm having a hard time believing that their whole thing with Lacey Evans is like, wasn't she like a former Marine and she's a proud mother and a proud married woman and she's all about women's rights. And now she's turning her back on all of her beliefs and everything that she was about to shack up with a 71-year-old legend. And of course, you know, I mean, Space Mountain still has the longest line in the park or whatever, according to him. But I think Space Mountain might be broke down and old. And this is another case of we'll use a storyline from 1985 kind of thing. It's bad booking. It's bad writing. It's bad creative. It's water thin. I don't see Lacey Evans as top tier talent. Her wrestling match with Charlotte was, I don't want to say it was garbage, but Lacey should still be in NXT in my opinion. I understand that Vince was in love with her for some reason and wanted to bring her up. She has a look. It's weird because if you pay attention, sometimes her Southern accent comes and goes. And her in-ring work just needs polished up. It's not terrible, but it's sure as hell she's not one of the four horse women. You know, she needs a lot of work done. She needs to make her moves crisp. Just running from one side of the ring to the other, it's supposed to be you take three giant leaps, turn, hit the ropes. She takes like six steps sometimes, baby steps to make her turn. It looks very not as scripted, but as I forgot what I'm supposed to do. How do I do it now? I better be at this point in this place. Like she's trying to remember the match in her mind as she's going. At some point, I almost see her lips going like she's like verbalizing it. And it's not quite the level of deer in the headlights, but she needs some work. She needs some work. Ring presence is not that great. Ring awareness is definitely bad. And the fluidity of her moves it's off. It's only a 5 out of 10. Now, not everybody can be Ric Flair himself and be a 10, but with this women's division, it is. I would say that, you know, in fluidity, when Charlotte's on, she wrestles a Sasha Banks, a Bayley, a Becky Lynch, or Shayna Baszler. I mean, some of these women, we've got a 10 out of 10 in fluidity. They know how to make the match go. They know how to stretch it out. They can tell a story. Lacey Evans can't tell a story, and the storyline that she's in currently is really, really bad. Yeah. And I just don't see where it's going. I see it blowing up, and I don't see how she's a top-tier talent when you have so many other women. I'd rather see somebody like Dana Brooke, who's been there forever, who actually can go and just doesn't get the opportunity, get a shot, and do something and develop a character there.
Oh, yeah, Dana Brooke. I mean, I think she is a one of the most underutilized and abused, in, not obviously in a physical way, but in a kind of a booking way, abused talents. Yeah. That is just, she's always there to take the pinfall, always there as the butt of the joke, always there to be the one to tap out. And once in a while, you know, I'd like to see Dana Brooke actually break out. And I think that fans respect somebody that sticks around for that long being that mistreated, booking-wise, of course. I think that she has... I think if you were to put her in a kind of a Kofi Kingston scenario from Elimination Chamber a couple of years ago, she could be one of those breakout stars where all of a sudden, wait a minute, Dana Brooke could possibly win the championship, where it's kind of, it's that organic kind of movement for her. And I don't think that's right now, but I think that it's there, and maybe that WWE doesn't realize it's there because of how long she's been there. When you cut, you know, when you cut your teeth, so to speak, in front of fans for that long, and you take your bumps and you take your humiliations for as long as Dana Brooke has, I think the fans are ready to go, hey, wait a minute, why don't we do something with her, right? So that could possibly be down the road, or maybe not. It could never happen. But, yeah, certainly, I don't know. With your comments about Lacey Evans in the ring, she doesn't feel a match. She tries to remember the match. And when you don't feel it and you just go, okay, this next, then this next, then this next, instead of, like, just kind of feeling the moment, and maybe she is feeling it, but she's not showing it, certainly. I don't think she's terrible in the ring, but the problem is when you put her against all the other women on the roster that she's been in the ring with, she becomes exposed quickly. That's, I think, the problem. If you put her in the Divas era, she would look like, you know, the second coming of Charlotte Flair. I mean, she would be, you know, it's all because of she's right next to some of the best of all time right now. So, all right, well, just kind of one other thing here, and then we'll wrap things up. But and I know we aren't going to be able to touch on everything because there's just too much to talk about. But Keith Lee, Sheamus, that dynamic, and then Miz and Morrison. Mr. Money in the Bank, once again, hit both of them. Go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Money in the Bank deserves to get in a car, drive off that planet, or actually, you know, get in the boat with the other wrestlers and, you know, flat earth it and just fall off. He is channel-changing heat for me. It's the guy does not need that Money in the Bank. What he needs to do is just stick to reality TV. His in-ring's terrible. He has done nothing but destroy John Morrison's career with the help of WWE's creative. Now that John Morrison went from a man that you wanted to watch in Lucha Underground and his appearances on Impact, and he's basically turned into the Potsy Weber to the Happy Days gang, it's really, really sad. The way he's acting, the way – just everything. And he's always the one to take the pin. It makes no sense for him to repeat after and try to act like the Miz is just garbage. And I don't care about the Money in the Bank briefcase. The only thing I like about the fact that they keep screwing it up is it's making the under titles look good again. It's making the U.S. title and the Intercontinental title have more prestige instead of this fictitious contract inside a briefcase that you have to, for some reason, carry around with you all the time. It's inane. I've never liked it. That's just me. That's personal. Whatever. John Morrison's being hurt really bad. Sheamus and Keith, I'm glad they got the win, because if it went the other way, I'd probably be angry, and they wouldn't have let Morrison get the pin on anybody anyway. I'm kind of concerned about Sheamus. He's looking a little skinny. So is Randy Orton. So is Mark Henry. A lot of people are looking skinny. They just might not be working out like they did before with the pandemic. It's not like sickly skinny. Just you can tell they lost a little bit of weight. But with that being said, I was never the biggest Sheamus fan because he's kind of a generic power wrestler, kick-punch dynamic. However, since he's been working this Keith Lee and angle with McIntyre, he's looked a lot better in the ring. I can tell he's trying a little bit more. His fluidity has gone up a little bit. It's not a masterpiece, but I can tell he's improving. Even though he's been around all these years, something's happening. Maybe it's losing the weight, not being as big and bulky, not always doing the pound on the chest 10 times and, you know, calling to a crowd that's not there. He's trying a little bit more. That's what I've noticed in the last month and a half with him, is that his efforts aren't the same. And so I'm seeing improvement. And so I got to take my hat off to him and say, hey, you're doing better. If you can keep it up, maybe we can get you to a different level, get you a better finisher than that stupid kick, because I can't stand it, just because it's everybody and their brother, who was a big person, used a kick to the face, whatever. Keith Lee, I love Keith Lee. I think he's amazing. And obviously, you know, the only thing I've noticed, have you noticed his promo has changed from the well-spoken, well-thought-out to more relaxed speaking?
I noticed that the past week. And I said to myself, which I actually like, because yes, he spoke very differently and you paid attention, but he spoke in a way that was weird, right? Like he would pause where you shouldn't pause, and it was just drawn out. It's just more of his natural speaking voice, which somebody got in his ear and said, yeah, I noticed that. Yep.
I kind of liked it before when he spoke in the weird way, but if he did that, I would have liked it when he first came into the – like if he cut his promos in the beginning of Raw, like he's entering the building wearing a suit, it makes him look like a professional all the way around. It gives you another facet to the diamond that is Keith Lee. I love his in-ring work. I'm really confused why they keep doing this whole I'll be your friend and then – we win a match. We love each other. Yeah. Now let's fight when we come back from commercial break. So, I love that crackpot commentary. Something happened during commercial break. Could you repeat that for me? Could you pray tell me what happened?
They didn't do it. They didn't do anything. Yeah. They didn't say anything what happened. Nothing.
Exactly. Like, is this like Jeopardy? Like you're going to give the answer and I have to give you the clue or the question? Yep. Like what is we got in a verbal argument and it ended with fisticuffs? So it just reminds me of an episode of Nitro a long time ago where Tony Schiavone watched Horse Hogan finish a guy off with a suplex, and his commentary was, and he finishes him off with that move. He actually said that. So I don't get why they fight. They don't explain why they fight. And then at the end of it, they're friends again. I need to know where this is going. Once again, you're trying to feed me a pork chop, but I don't have any side dishes. I got to build up to the pork chop. I don't just go for the pork chop. I want my green beans and my mashed potatoes. And we're getting no green beans and mashed potatoes. We're just getting a fight. And then it's like having your pork chop and then having your dessert and then going back and eating your pork chop again. We're friends. We're enemies. We're friends.
Yep. Yeah, it is. I can understand where we had Drew McIntyre and Sheamus actually break down, because we know the history of those two being, you know, they grew up together. They trained together. They were in the same promotion together, which, by the way, and I keep promoting this and I get nothing for this from the WWE Network. But when Stone Cold had Drew McIntyre on his Broken Skull sessions, you learn a lot about McIntyre. And he talks about Sheamus, how they grew up and all this. They had these big dreams and all that kind of stuff. And they literally grew up together. So you could understand with Sheamus and Drew where they would fight like brothers and, you know, but yet at the end of the day, they still love each other. That kind of makes sense. With Keith Lee and Sheamus, I don't think there's any history there. Are they just following what the dynamic is between Drew and Keith? I mean, I don't understand this. This makes zero sense. They didn't tell you why they started fighting. I'm assuming there's a disagreement and it just ended in a brawl. I guess that's the hole we're supposed to fill in, because the creative or production was too lazy to show us how it broke down. But yeah. I don't know. That was weird. But again, okay, if they have a match, then why the hell am I supposed to care who wins, because they're going to end up making out at the end of the match anyway? Like, I don't care if you don't care. So I don't know. This is very, very weird. And it's not to crap on Sheamus, who I think has really kind of put himself back into the island of relevancy, to take a line out of Roman Reigns's career right now. But also Keith Lee, who was immediately interjected into beating Randy Orton, the hottest heel in the company, in the very first match he had, which I still get very angry about when I think about. And then he gets interjected into WWE Championship opportunities, and now he's in this Drew McIntyre and Sheamus kind of weird rivalry they got going on. I ultimately think it's going to be Keith Lee versus Sheamus at the Rumble, or they just enter the Rumble directly. I don't know. Because all you have to do, by the way, is just declare that you're in the match and you're in the match. I mean, that's how it works.
You know, I'm with you 100%. Obviously, this is going to go somewhere, but this is one of those deals. This is the convoluted booking. This is when you get writers who think that they are smarter than your average bear. So it's like, well, we're going to tease it, but you don't know what's going to happen. And the rest of us are saying it's going to explode. They're not going to get along. Like, we see it from a mile away. This isn't like you know, watching the movie Memento, where you find out that everything the guy was hunting for, he had already done, and he was just being used as a pawn. This is like water thin. We could see it from a mile away kind of thing. They're not going to get along. The only thing I can see with this is they might be the last two people in the Rumble. And that's where, you know, it explodes again, because they eliminate some big threat. And, you know, then they blow up. And at that point, it's too little too late, because then you have to figure who's the winner going to face. If it's going to be Sheamus versus McIntyre at WrestleMania, that's going to, while it has a little bit of legs to it, I don't see it being a marquee match. Or if it's Keith Lee and he goes on to face Roman Reigns, that could have something. But that's going to be, you're going to have to really force that build. And of course you're switching shows. You're going from a Raw guy going after a SmackDown guy. Last time I remember that was the Fallen One, Chris Benoit, going after, you know, Triple H, and leapfrogging over from SmackDown. So, I don't know what is going to happen as far as the potential of one of those two winning the Rumble, but their friendship is going to be short lived. And yeah, you could work something out with McIntyre and Sheamus, but I really don't see it as being a big potential draw.
I don't think so either. It's weird to have people fight and then hug and then fight and then hug, because it just disconnects the audience from getting emotionally invested, because, you know, at the end of the day, well, they're friends anyway. It's not a thing you need to do, especially with really now two different pairings with Sheamus and Drew, which is much more understandable that they'd fight like brothers and then at the end of the day they love each other. But with Keith Lee and Sheamus, there's no need to do it. There's just no reason to do it whatsoever. Anyway, and nonetheless, also, why would Keith Lee trust Sheamus after what he's done week after week after the match is over? Bro kick. I mean, like, so it's weird. But all right. Well, is there anything else you wanted to touch on before we wrap things up here?
Just a couple simple things. So obviously not everybody has declared for the Royal Rumble. And so I want to shock all of our listeners, guys. I didn't want to be the one, but I'm going to tell you straight up, guys. I am declaring myself right now eligible for the Royal Rumble. Thank you. Thank you. I know all the smart money's on the 5'9", 145-pound, 45-year-old, dashingly handsome man. If you guys have my back, thank you. I'm going to start my own stable, too. I'll probably have Austin Theory in it, because, you know, he just bounces back and forth. I'll kick him out eventually, you know, teach him a lesson. But so I was bouncing this off you real quick, and then I'll do some shout-outs, and we're done. And so Royal Rumble surprise entrance, I was just thinking about a couple people. I would hope it might be the return of Samoa Joe to active wrestling, but I got a bad feeling that we're never going to see him wrestle again. I think it could be the debut of Damian Priest as a main roster star. And then maybe the reemergence of Brock Lesnar on his limited schedule. However, I don't know how that would play out, because he versus either McIntyre or Reigns, depending, or he versus Goldberg. If Goldberg happens again, it's not going to be a marquee matchup. With that being said, the two I fear is Lars Sullivan coming back and going on a tear if he's not fired at that point. I don't know what's going to happen with that guy. I really don't. And, you know, it wouldn't be one of our shared podcast shows if I didn't bring up the name of Lars Sullivan. And the worst idea is Baron Corbin going on a tear inside the Royal Rumble, beating down both Rey and Dominic, only for Cain Velasquez to come out to the Rumble and make the
save. What are you doing? Oh, God. Oh, you're hurting me. My insides.
On the women's, real quick.
Yeah.
Rhea Ripley making a main roster debut, and the thing that we all want to see, the unsigned legend out there, Tessa Blanchard.
Ooh.
That would actually, if the Royal Rumble was terrible and Tessa Blanchard made a debut as a female in the female, well, obviously she's a female, but if she made a debut in the female Rumble, and especially if she won it, that would make the Rumble worth winning. Or watching.
If those of you out there don't know who Tessa Blanchard is, please do your homework. I mean, like, you need to understand what she is, and that would be a big deal. I agree. And quick comments too on the men's, which your whole scenario here of potentials, that was mine too, is like, well, Brock Lesnar, you know, people aren't thinking about it. I don't think Brock Lesnar would be a good choice. And the reason I don't think he'd be a good choice is because who the hell is he going to face that he hasn't already faced at WrestleMania? There's nobody new, big, exciting that you're like, oh man, that would be great. He's already faced Goldberg 100 times. We just had Drew versus Brock last year where he lost. And yeah, he could come back to avenge his loss. Okay, maybe. But then there's what? He wins and he's going to face Roman Reigns for the 900th time? Yes, Roman Reigns is a much different character now, but still. I mean, so there really isn't anybody he hasn't worked with before. So I think it's more Edge, to be honest with you. And then, you know, again, it could Tessa Blanchard on the women's side. And I know people are also thinking about potentially, oh, Becky Lynch. Could Becky Lynch come back? I think no. I think Becky Lynch is a solid no. Do you think there's a possibility of Becky Lynch re-debuting in the Rumble? Or are we just really just fantasy land here, given that she just gave birth a month ago?
There's no way she's going to come back this soon. A new mother is going to want to be with the baby probably at least 3 months. You know, I'm not quite sure what standard maternity leave is, which, I mean, obviously this is, you know, the private contractor thing that doesn't really apply. But I could tell, you know, if you're leaving a career that pays that much to have a child, you're going to want to spend as much time before you go back on the – I mean, not necessarily on the road, but – and especially the fact that if you have an infant, I don't think you're really going to be wanting to go – and potentially exposing that infant to COVID by wrestling people.
Right. Yeah.
I
don't think, and people are, oh, Becky Lynch is coming back. That's enough time. And she, you know, look, I think she'll probably bounce back body-wise just fine. But again, ring shape and just coming off pregnancy, of which during that pregnancy you probably weren't doing and taking bumps. It's going to take many months. I think SummerSlam is probably a much more realistic time frame for her to return. Maybe even later in the year. I mean, she may want to take 6, 9, 12 months off with her child. I mean, that's obviously up to her, and I don't think anyone could blame her for that. So those of you that think she can make a Royal Rumble return are dreaming. I mean, I would be absolutely floored from so many different perspectives, to being ring ready, to, like you said, putting a newborn at risk for potentially contracting COVID. It just, none of this would make any sense for Becky Lynch to return, and really you would kind of question her motherhood. Like, wouldn't you want to be home with your kid that's a month old? I mean, there's a lot of things I don't think that would, from a perception standpoint, be good for her. But did you have anything else before we close things out?
I was going to do a shout out real quick to a few people. It's my Memphis wrestling family. A lot of people I've reconnected since I've been back in town, down here in Memphis. I'm helping out the old Kooky Canuck in Cordova, old boss of mine, Sean. He and I have been working, and there's a strong group of pro wrestling fans who love the show. So I just wanted to say their names real quick because I love these guys, and I hadn't seen them in almost 6 years. And now we got together and it's like, we haven't missed a beat. And that's going to be Cameron Perrier, Marcus Rooks, Michael Bradley. And then I also want to shout out to a local Memphis wrestling podcaster and radio personality by the name of Kevin Cerrito, and a follower of the show, a good friend of ours on Twitter. His name's Tim Bass. I've never met the guy, but he lives in town and might meet up with him someday. And aside from that, I just think it's fantastic to be back on the show. And you and I have discussed some stuff that's off the air, and hopefully if that comes to fruition, we have a lot of really cool surprises for people maybe coming up in the future.
Absolutely, yeah, and we'll kind of keep that under wraps for now, but I think we do have some fun things coming up in the future, in the coming months, and just in time for WrestleMania season, so I will say that. So, Michael, it's great to have you back. Looking forward to our future endeavors, as they say, and I hope I hope you're doing well, and we'll be in touch very soon.
Absolutely, sir. You have a great night, and everybody out there, take care of yourselves.
Absolutely. Thanks, Michael.
All right, good night, sir.
Good night.